So this is the experts class, the the advanced. But one of the things which people always ask about is when their mind wanders, you think it should be pretty easy just to watch something like this moment, or something like the breath, or be able to just watch the feelings in the body. And you ask yourself, why is it sometimes that which is really easy, which you know causes great benefit to you, just peace, happiness, good health, why is it sometimes so difficult to do? And a lot of the time you can imagine, if you've been trying to watch the breath, or you've been trying to be in this moment, you're trying to be silent for again and again and again and again, and if sometimes you don't succeed, sometimes that's one of the reasons why we develop a bad attitude towards what we're doing. A sense, I've got to achieve this. If I don't, I feel a sense of failure. So you try even harder. And as we try even harder, though we get sometimes more frustrated because the trying is the biggest obstacle. And it means after a while we just get what I say is a bad relationship to our meditation. We keep forcing it. And when the mind wanders off, what it's telling you is that relationship we have with our meditation practice is not that good. If instead we're kind to our mind, then we find that our mind just builds up its confidence, and it can stay with something like in the present moment, it can stay with the breath, it can stay with whatever it likes to stay with. If you look at all the subjects which you think about in the sense the mind wanders off somewhere, why does it wander off? Is because it's, I don't call it wandering off, I call it escaping. Escaping from your scrutiny, it's afraid of you. It has got bad attitude towards it. But if you like it, if you and your mind, or say if you're watching your breathing, you and your breath have a very good relationship, then of course it's easy to stay with. It's like sometimes you see an old friend you haven't seen for years. And then when they're with you, you catch up and you have a wonderful time together. And it's that like learning how to be with things. When we are meditating, one of the great meditation objects or techniques or methods, whichever you wish to call it, which I practice, and which is, I think is a great way of looking at meditation, is the old Emperor's Three Questions meditation. Now is the most important time, the one you're with, in this particular case, the object right in front of your attention in this moment is the most important in the whole world, and the most important thing to do is to care. Those little three things. So that central part of those Emperor's Three Questions, the answers to those three questions, that which is right in front of you is really important. It doesn't mean the breath. It doesn't mean your body, it doesn't mean brilliant lights inside. It means whatever is in front of you right now is important. Even if you're wandering off into some weird fantasy, that is important. Why? Because it's happening right now. So we tend not to judge what we're aware of. Instead, we allow ourselves to be with it. Give it importance and give it care. Because many of these things which you are watching, aware of, if you try to control them, try to change them, judge them, say this is good or this is terrible, then you find that you tend to feed the restless mind. The story behind all of this, one of those great stories from the Buddha this time, which really made an impact on me, was the Emperor's Three Questions. Was the monster in the Emperor's Palace. You all know that story. It's a brilliant one. You can use it for so many parts of life. But this particular aspect is in your meditation. The Emperor away for a while, come back and find a monster in the palace. How do you deal with monsters in the palace? You welcome them. You're kind to them. Thank you, monster, for visiting me. And in the story, what happened next was everybody was so kind to that monster. With every act of kindness, every word of kindness, every thought of kindness, the monster just grew smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. Until, with one more act of kindness, the monster vanished completely away. The full story is called the anger-eating monster simile. And it's a very powerful psychology, but even more powerful in that you use it in your meditation to stop the wandering mind. By not trying to stop it, by caring for it. Because underneath, well, you think you're not doing anything, you're just going to encourage more restlessness. No, underneath all of that, because you're giving kindness to your mind, you're paying attention to what's happening right now. How on earth can you call that restlessness or wandering? Where whatever's happening in the mind, you're giving importance and you're with it totally, caring for it. It may be the weirdest meditation object you've ever experienced in your life, but it's right here. You're with it. And you find because of that, because of caring, you're with this object, whatever it is, you're not judging it, you're not stigmatizing it, you're right here with it. And what that means is it starts to calm down and become peaceful all by itself. A few days ago when I gave a little simile, I was on a talk on Zoom to Sri Lanka last Thursday. And I did mention just one of those similes of Ajahn Chah, and it was, couldn't have much time to emphasize the simile. I'm sure you've all seen me do this before, waving your hand up in the air. This hand only moves. This is like simile of a leaf on a tree. The leaf on a tree only moves because something is blowing on it, the wind. And if the wind stops, the leaf stops blowing. When the wind stops, the leaf keeps on moving. It keeps on moving. Once the wind stops, but it moves less and less and less until the friction eventually calms the leaf down and becomes still all by itself. That is its default position, to be totally still. And that's the same with the human mind. It doesn't matter where you start, what you're watching, when you start meditating, or you've been there for 10 minutes or 15 minutes, you think you're being restless. It's not. You're just fighting, not dealing properly with what you're experiencing right in this moment. Whatever you're experiencing, whatever is the object of the mind, it's important. Why? Because it's here. You pay full attention to it. And you care for it. Like the monster in the emperor's palace, the more kindness you give it, the more it calms down, the more it gets peaceful. You don't do anything except observe what nature has put right in front of your mental attention right now. You observe it, you care for it, and once that care, that kindness gets strong, you keep it right here, right now, because this moment is important. Then you find you've got the key to overcoming a restless mind. The mind, whatever the object is, doesn't move. Because of the kindness, the object gets more pure. Because you're caring for it, it grows. Becomes very still, very stable. The leaf only moves because the wind is blowing. After the wind stops, it's still moving, but less and less and less. And if you can understand that, there is no such thing as a restless mind. Sometimes we want an object to be aware of and we're observing something else. today and right now. You're aware of something. What is it? Are you caring for it, or are you trying to get somewhere else? If you're happy to be here, you're with whatever you're experiencing right now, and you're adding the kindness to your mindfulness, then whatever it is you're aware of, with kindness, will get more and more peaceful, more still. And no matter what you think is just an interesting, amazing, stimulating type of experience, that when you start just being here with it, understanding it with kindness, you'll find that it starts to slow down and even stop. And what started off with being even something you thought, this can't be right, this is too sensuous, this is too much ill will or something, when you go right inside of it, you find that there's no ill will left at all. Ill will is your reaction to what you're experiencing. Sensory desire is your reaction to what you are experiencing. But we change that reaction to something like care. The purity of just being kind. Not to want, not to try and get rid of, but just to be with and appreciate the lessons of what this object is teaching us. If you try to fight your restlessness, you'll find you'll just prolong it. The negative energy of trying to think this is bad, trying to get rid of it. You're seeing the wrong thing, you're fighting the wrong thing. Don't fight the objects of your mind. Fight the reactions, the bad reactions to them. Be still. Be kind. No matter what you're watching. It's the same as the weather. Sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold, sometimes it's rainy. You can't really change the weather. All you can do is you can just protect yourself from it by being peaceful with it, allowing it just to be. And then sooner or later, when you're in the nice Dhamma hall, just letting things be, the weather is just gorgeous. Whether it's hot, whether it's windy, it's clouds or just the blue sky, you can admire its depth. We're not fighting it, but you're being with it and learning from it. So that is the one marvelous way of overcoming the restlessness of the mind. We're with it, whatever you're experiencing. Making peace with it. Being kind, being gentle. And that way you find that what you're really letting go of is this wanting, this control. Too many people have been control freaks. Please don't do that in meditation. Just be here. Be with what's happening. Let it be. And see the power of just changing the way you look at whatever you're experiencing. Okay. So that's just a little bit of an introduction. So now if we can get into our meditation postures, whatever they happen to be, and we can start the meditation in a few moments. And again, we do a 45-minute meditation here, and by the time we start, it's be 3:15, so we finish about 4 o'clock. So, closing the eyes, and just for preparation, to make sure you've got enough cushion under your butt if you're sitting on the floor, that you got a nice comfortable chair, you can push your butt further away from the back or deeper into the chair, and you can just move the legs apart or move them forward or whatever you need to do to try and get your body in the most comfortable position to begin with. Once your body is in what you think is a comfortable position, many of you come here every Saturday, so you know the beginning words of guidance. I'm going to add something else at this beginning. with your eyes closed, once you've got this basic comfort, I'm going to suggest you make a little resolution. It's called programming your mindfulness. To say, I will always be kind to the content of the present moment. I'll always be kind to the content of this present moment. I'll always be kind to the content of this present moment throughout the meditation. In your own words, this is a time when I've mentioned before to program your mindfulness. And when I say that to begin with, it leaves this imprint throughout the meditation. Sometimes I think I forgot it, but then there may come a difficulty in the meditation, a little problem, and the mind remembers it. And it acts, and the kindness returns. So now be aware of your body. I always start with the feet. I know the position of my feet when I start meditating. I feel them. This little piece of wood in front of me needs to be adjusted. That's better. Now that wood is not pressing against the toes of my left foot anymore. And I can feel the legs, sorry, the feet first of all. And after a while, you practice this day in, day out, you really get to be sensitive to your own body. You get to know it. It does become like a good friend. And being a good friend, you can be kind to it. So I'm kind to my feet. And as a result of that, I've done this so often, is the feet relax. Fear makes muscles tense. A simple thing like kindness just makes all the muscles at ease. And you feel that. And you also know there's nothing, no health problems for my feet right now. But if there were, that sort of ease, rest, feeling even like energies flow through your feet instead of be blocked, you find that this means everything is healthy down there. And so I move up to my ankles. My ankles don't cause me much trouble, but nevertheless I linger there until I can really sense any of the nerve endings around my ankles. It's really checking them, but doing more than just checking them, making sure that everything is at ease. And go up from the ankles, up the legs. A large number of muscles in the lower legs to begin with. Also making sure there's nothing pressing on those calves. And everything is at ease. It is like laying your legs on this beautiful mattress, soft, so there's hardly any pressure on those calves at all. feel everything just being at ease, opening up, being restful, and going to the knees. The knees are also at ease. If ever I have injured them, or I can stop there a moment and just wishing them well. Sometimes people ask, why do monks do this chanting, wishing people well? Because I do it on my own body. When I'm meditating, I wish my knees well. It works. And just all this chanting and stuff, that's just extending what you know works in your own body. Then I go up through my thighs. Those thighs today, they're a bit tired. I can sense them. I know them. I've lived with them for the last 70 years. So just give them kindness. I don't rush past them. They're important. When I do that, the feelings change in my thighs. They change and relax. And they become relaxed. Move from there to my butt. Pressed against the cushion. It's quite a strong sensation. They're not like in my thighs, which are hardly any pressure on them at all. But nevertheless, I stay there and relax everything as much as possible. To accept that pressure. To not add to it. And already it's getting less. You see, it feels like it's getting less. And that's the most important. Getting balanced. A few moments ago I felt more pressure on my left buttock than my right buttock. Don't know why. But now it's balanced. And from there, when I feel I can't make that any more comfortable, I go to my waist. And that always responds to just a little bit of a stretch of my back. Don't need to move my legs, just that waist, to make it super comfortable. I don't notice the very fact that I care for it. I'm willing to spend a minute or so making sure it's okay. That helps. If somebody sees you, an old friend or a new friend, they just say, how are you? They spend a minute or two with you. That makes you feel much better. That's like parts of my body when I linger and say, how are you? I care for you. The body becomes more at peace. It doesn't tense up, tighten up. Inflammations ease. Tightness loosens. And I go up my back. As I go up, I can feel as many of these vertebrae as I possibly can. After many years, you can actually become very sensitive to all these parts of your body. And checking that everything's okay. It's a waste of time being sensitive if it's irritating you. But adding the kindness to mindfulness makes everything start to feel very pleasant. And I get to my shoulders, and I usually go to my torso next, but my shoulders feel a bit tense, so I'm going to loosen them. Ah, there we are. My underrobe was a bit badly adjusted. That's better. and then go to the torso. And that's when I just check my intestines, lungs, stomach, lungs, and heart. They're in pretty good shape. If they feel good, that's the best I can know. I stay with them. Intestines are a little bit tense. I just be with them and relax them. Give them kindness. And sometimes I imagine these organs in the body. Just imagine them. They may not be an accurate imagination or visualization, but it's good enough to then start sending gentleness and kindness to them. And feeling them get looser, easier, at peace. Any tightness tends to ease off. It's the way I keep good health. And go back up to the top of my body, loosening the shoulders and making sure the arms are just, they feel good. And of course at the end of the arms, the hands. By this time my mindfulness is strong enough. I can actually tell me those hands, especially the fingers, did need to be adjusted. So I adjust them. So you get the maximum possible comfort for my fingers. And go back up to my neck, making sure that's all nice and at ease. And to the right face. By this time your sensitivity should be quite pronounced. So you can really feel the muscles around the eyes and the mouth, maybe the nose or anywhere else you wish to. But to me that's where the interesting stuff is happening. That is connected to my emotional world. I want to make sure that the muscles in my face are so configured, at ease, resting, at peace, so it calms my mind down as well. No fear, no tension. This nice, peaceful, open face. And then I just imagine my whole body sitting here. Just checking the whole thing. All parts of it pretty at ease. And I keep on being aware of my body until I start to experience the delight of relaxation. It always comes, it seems. It's arising now. Because one thing I know is when you start to be aware of the delight, the piti sukha, once you start to become aware of the piti sukha, the delight associated with the relaxed body, relaxation goes deeper. my body feels pleasant, at ease, relaxing. Because the awareness of the body in the moment is delightful. That's why it is easy to stay there. But there comes a time to take this deeper into the mind, into silence and stillness and peace. How peaceful are you? Never ever feel that this is something which you have to achieve, something which is never good enough for you. Just know, in this moment, how peaceful you are. Just the way that I connect with my mind, the sixth sense. What are you aware of right now? And how are you reacting to this? Are you trying to get somewhere in your meditation? Whatever you're experiencing right now, whatever that is, if you're aware of it and kind to it, you cannot call that a restless mind. You're here, you're with what is happening, learning from it. Because you don't want anything, you're passive, learning, rather than controlling. The wind is not blowing on the leaf. The leaf may still be moving, but the wind isn't agitating it, which means the leaf will move less and less and come to stillness all by itself. Do not blow on the leaf that is your mind. I will be quiet now. Don't go anywhere. Stay here in this moment. getting close to the end of the meditation period. How peaceful are you? Are you comfortable in this moment? Happy to be here? The peace generates the stillness. The stillness creates energy and insight. How does your body feel? Sitting here for 45 minutes. As I come out, it feels so, so comfortable. I will now ring the gong 3 times, as usual. When the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, it's a sign, a signal to come out from your meditation. Some questions. Any questions from the local audience here, first of all? Yes, thank you.
Hi, Ajahn. I seem to be quite profound with your memory skills, and you seem to remember all the similes and all the history of your entire life, and I was wondering, would you be able to share your process, or how do you have so much memory? I can't even remember what I ate yesterday.
If what is important to you, you can remember, but it's also, that's all stored there somewhere, and the ability just to pick it up and just remember it. One of the things which I knew from memory, it's the word which we have for memory in Pali, it's also sati, the same word for mindfulness. And that sort of struck me. What's the connection between being aware and having a good memory? It is because a lot of the time that our brain is lazy. It only recalls what it thinks is important. And especially if we've been thinking a lot, then sometimes our brain is tired. It hasn't got any space. But after a while, when you're very quiet and peaceful, then when you're listening to something or reading it and you're relaxed, your memory improves enormously. Sometimes you remember not just what was said, but the time it was said. Sometimes that you think you've forgotten that, but it's stored in the mind somewhere. And that's one of the other things I was quite astounded by. There were some of the teachings which, say, an Ajahn Chah gave me when I was young, which I never understood. And I thought I'd rejected them. I never thought about them for years. Then something happens in your meditation, get a beautiful experience. And then that simile just comes up. It's just like those seeds in the desert. They stay there for years, and then when the rain falls, then it germinates and grows, just like the memories. So it's fascinating that all that time, where were they stored? They weren't stored anywhere. They were just like potential, just waiting for the mind to tell you what's happening. There's two types of memory, the memory in the brain and some other parts of the body, but the memory of the mind, two different types, which is why your mind memory can sometimes remember past lives and stuff which there's no way there's any connection, bodily connection, between this life and the previous life or previous lives. How does that work? The only way it works is because it's like, the only way I call it is like a resonance of this mind state and a previous mind state. That's fascinating that I never really say much about that except on retreats where people can, you get a nice deep meditation, ask yourself, what's my earliest memory? Just once, that's all. If it's going to work, it's going to work straight away. It's fascinating. You experience those things and then after a while you check them out, it's real. Weird stuff. So memory is a huge, huge subject. Mostly unexplored. Don't know if that answers your questions. Probably gave you even more questions to ask. But anyway, we'll do some questions from interstate or overseas now. Very good. From Germany, first of all, how can I turn sadness into kindness? How can I find help within me to be emotionally strong when there's no Ajahn Brahm around to ask and help? I'm always around. No, look. It's not Ajahn Brahm, it's just like wisdom, it's just kindness. To be emotionally strong, after a while, you look inside of yourself. There's all the energy, the power within you, within this moment, within your own act of kindness. To get the emotional strengths, we understand the emotional weaknesses, the dis-ease of the mind, things like anger, it's not worth it. Things like fear, what are you afraid of? Fear doesn't lessen the likelihood of pain in the future, it actually increases it. So often what you're afraid of, you make happen. And you all know that wonderful simile of grasshopper walking across the pool of acid, commanded by his master to do that, and he fell in. It wasn't acid, it was only water. And then the master, you know, admitting he lied, this Zen master, and then said that we called it acid because otherwise you wouldn't have fallen in. Fear pushed you in, little grasshopper, only fear. Fear made you catch COVID. Fear gave you the heart attack. Fear destroyed your meditation. Only fear. And after a while, you find out how powerful that truth is. But how you find help within you, just lessen the fear. And after a while, you give guided meditation, but when you pass your driving license, you don't need a driving instructor anymore. It's So please, pass the license, the test, as soon as possible. And then you can be emotionally strong. The next question, why I keep having eye spasms during meditation? You know, sometimes it is because we're not, one of the reasons, sometimes people start seeing lights, like starts of nimittas in meditation. And it's like confusing for the brain. The brain's saying, well, it's seeing something, it must have its eyes open, but it's not having its eyes open. And attention goes to the apparatus of vision, rather than just what you're seeing. And so what happens is, what I found very helpful is you get some eye shades, put the eye shades on your eyes when you're meditating. And then you find out that that stops the eye spasms. Now, next question. If at the end of a sitting I feel quite unsettled, say I didn't feel still, in these times is it better to try to adjust and sit some more or do something different entirely and come back to it later? Experiment and find out which actually works. But if you feel quite unsettled, now just take the feeling of unsettledness as your main object of meditation. What is that like, being unsettled? What does it feel like? And just go into it, don't stigmatize it, saying this is bad, or it shouldn't be like that, I should be much more clear. Just let it be. Unsettled, let it be. And then you find, well, how can I call this unsettled anymore? From Rajagopalan, how can we discern normal thinking from wisdom in meditation? That's an easy answer, because wisdom comes from stillness. And it's what the Buddha said, samadhi pachayang yata bhutayana dasana. From the stillness, the mind sees things as it truly is. That's wisdom. Stillness has to precede it. And so you know what stillness is. The mind is peaceful, calm, no thoughts coming up in the mind. And that energizes the mind. It gives it power. See deeply into things. And I love telling these stories because they're fascinating. You sit here, have a nice meditation, look at the carpet in this room. We haven't changed this carpet since this hall was built. Must be about 30 years now, I think, this old carpet. It's got some great energy in it, you know. We've had some really great meditations on this carpet. But you look at it and sometimes, wow, I haven't seen that before. You're seeing the same old carpet, but the light blues are just more gorgeous than you've seen before. And the yellows and the pinks, or rather purples, the dark blues. See the way they're all arranged. How can you see that? It's been there all the time. When the mind is peaceful, you can see deeply into things. And you can stay with it long enough for it to open out to you. And that becomes the wisdom. It's not thinking. You try and describe it afterwards, and that's how we think about things. By the time, it's just so wise, it's just there. Truth doesn't need a name. And little by little, it's gorgeous, it's beautiful. Technically, five hindrances are gone, then you can actually see things. Last question. Oh no, sorry, that was only one part of this question. Is it that thinking follows a pattern like chatter, belief about self, me-making, and wisdom is calming and leads to freeing from the world? Its wisdom arises from calming. Our wisdom also does more calming. It's like the dance of stillness and wisdom, just going around one another, each one deepening the other. And lastly, dear Ajahn, why every time I meditate now, I always feel there's a pulsing sensation in some parts of my body, especially the left head. It even causes difficulty to sleep sometimes. It's one of the things that's telling me is that when you start meditating, you can relax the body as much as you can. It may not be perfectly relaxed, even with some pulsing in there. Then just go into it, go deeper into it. don't try and get rid of it. Try and focus too much on there, because it's not making it any better. When you go into just the stillness, and you know, the silence of the mind, one thing about that, it's always in this moment. How can there be any pulsing when the future and the past have gone? You're just right here in this moment. Movement starts to stop, which means you get past these things. So if there's pulsating there, it's part of your body, the body's done its job. Now go past the body. The way to go past, not really past, that's not the right word. You go inside and you can't feel the body anymore. I think I forget where I taught this, but those times when over in northeast Thailand we would meditate when the mosquitoes came out, a couple of hours with no protection at all. And in a couple of hours, Ajahn Chah was there, otherwise I wouldn't have done it, I'd run away. But then, what did you do? You went right inside the body, to where you couldn't feel the skin. So you couldn't feel any mosquitoes biting you. They'd be biting lots of other monks. It was a bit selfish, I suppose, in retrospect. But when you go deep into meditation, you can't feel the skin. So mosquitoes landing on you, not landing on you, I didn't know. And you were perfectly aware, beautifully aware. So, you know, this is what happens in meditation. So try and see if you can go past the body, inside of it. Don't pay too much attention to it. It's done its job. Now just do things like, if you like to watch the breathing or something, you're watching the breathing, but you can't feel anything else of your body, just the breath going in and going out. Don't know the left toe or the ear or whatever. Leave it alone. Just go inside. Anyway, and if there is anything really like some medical problem there, don't worry about that. In meditation, that's one of the best things you can possibly do, just go past it, go inside, and then you come out afterwards, and if there was something there, it tends to heal itself up. Okay, any other question from the floor, and then we can finish off.
Can I say something, Ajahn Brahm?
No. Yeah, come on, Eddie.
Ajahn Brahm, the world now we live in, we are all facing very negative energy, with the COVID, not going down, mutating, increasing, and then we have the floods, and then we have Ukraine, okay? So right here, we are doing the meditation to help us all, okay? Yeah. Is there any way, you can think, whereby we can all collectively, through meditation or what, to send love, like right now, to Russia, Ukraine, for example, yeah, to send love, positive energy,
We have
to help, overcome, And I believe if it's collectively done, like from us here and other centers to positive energy, we can,
We are
help the situation.
We are sending positive energy. For the last 45 minutes, this meditation has been live streamed all over the world.
But that is only to us individually.
Sorry?
The positive energy to the world is just to the people who listen here.
Yeah, no, this is all live streamed. Even the image, when we're meditating, especially the guided meditation, it goes much further than you ever think. Not just that, but every person the meditation touches. How many people will you meet in the next week? Every one of those people you will affect. It's amazing just how the good energy which everyone who listened and who will listen to talks like these, how that energy just goes to so many people in the world. I was just told by a vice president, Ksenia, You know, she, her family is just outside of Kiev. And she was saying just how many of the some people over in Poland, the refugees from Ukraine, how many of them listened to these talks. And how she wanted, can we have some of these talks translated into a Ukrainian? We're talking about that on Friday night. And then she was also saying, well, even if we translate it into Russian, because most people in Ukraine understand the Russian language. I think it's a very close language, I'm not quite sure myself. But anyway, they said there's so many of these talks are actually in Russian as well. Already being done, already translated, and good translations into Russian. So it's amazing that what actually happens in our Buddhist society of Western Australia is not really that confined. It's already out there. And that, I think, is much more powerful, you know, than actually just so-called spreading loving kindness. You need a connection there with somebody to really spread that loving kindness strongly. If you do know somebody, you know, can think of them, focus on them, it's much better to connect with them. But to connect with a large number of people who will be tired, exhausted, not very clear in their minds, their receptivity at this point of time is not that great.
Can I just quickly, the reason why I say this is, when I was in Malaysia, you know, okay,
yeah,
there was one evening after the Dharma talk, you know, we heard there's one lady who was a Buddhist, a lay person, disciples, yeah, who is very sick in hospital, you know. So we all, about 100 people, we gather in the shrine, this thing, and they were doing chanting and prayers, you know. And then what I heard was that was about 9 o'clock, by 11:30, the lady got up and walked around, and then she recovered.
Yeah, sometimes
like a collective energy. Sorry to say.
Yeah. Sometimes that can happen, but you knew her. You had a connection.
Yeah, we knew her.
Yeah. You need a connection to make it very powerful. Mm. You know, sometimes I do the chanting, may all beings be happy and well. And even just here in Perth. And they're still not happy and well. I should be able to retire by now.
No. But there's power in collective energy.
It is, but it needs to be focused. I mean, focusing is a hard one.
Sorry, thank you.
No, it's okay now. You never need to say sorry. Okay, now we can pay respects, and then at 5 o'clock there is another class. That's for the Be Quiet group.